Vedanta Swami iti namine. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyate Satarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. I'm very, very happy to be with all of you, especially along with Badahari Prabhu. When I was told that he was able to make it, my heart danced a little bit. And I'm sure it's going to dance some more and some more, along with all of you. The heading of what we're doing this weekend together is the essence of what a spiritual retreat is. It's taking shelter. Taking shelter of our real purpose, a real function in life. So taking shelter of the holy name is our entryway. It's that the whole weekend, this is the theme, this is the mood, exploring how to go further. Our teaching from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the living entity, part and parcel of the supreme living entity, belongs with Krishna, and some small group, we're in that small group of living entities, turned our attention away from Krishna. We belong with Krishna, and we turned our attention away from Krishna. The Sanskrit language says it in different ways, but Jiva Goswami's phrase is Bahir Mukha. Just like we sing in the Nrisingha prayers. Bahir Nrisingha Hridaye Nrisingha. Lord Nrisingadeva is, he's inside and outside. And Bahir, we turned our attention Bahir, away from Krishna. He didn't turn his attention away from us. Even when we turn our attention away from him, he doesn't. He hides himself because we want to not see him, so he hides himself within the heart of every living entity, guiding the living entity through their journey of madness in the material world, trying to find happiness where there's no happiness. Trying to find enjoyment separate from Krishna when there's no such thing. Hiding himself within the heart as super soul to guide that fruitless journey and then ultimately guide us back to our original position. So this is the original position returning part. That's the songs of Bhakti Vinod Thakur are going to be our main subject matter on this topic of taking shelter. I thought, because I'm a lover of Srimad Bhagavatam, I thought of beginning with a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that says it very nicely. This is from Uddhava Gita, Canto 11, Chapter 19. This is Uddhava speaking to Krishna. Let's say the verse together. Tapatrayena vibhatasya gore santapyamanasya bhavadvaranishaha Pashyami nanyacharanam tavangri dvandvata patrad amrita bivarshat. Uddhava says, my dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. The Bhagavatam is filled with poetry, and this is an example. Umbrellas are used to protect you from rain. So the lotus feet, Uddhava is comparing the lotus feet of Krishna to be like an umbrella. But then the inside of the umbrella is pouring down showers of delicious nectar. We're being protected from the rain of the threefold miseries of material existence. But then it's like Prithu Maharaj. It's a very similar example. When Prithu Maharaj was made the emperor, various devas came and offered their benedictions and gifts to Prithu Maharaj, and Varuna offered an umbrella that did the same. Shower of nectar would come from the inside of the umbrella. So our acharyas explained this, that the protection on the one hand of the lotus feet of Krishna, or the holy name of Krishna, which is the same as, not different from, the lotus feet of Krishna. We can get access to the lotus feet of Krishna through his holy name. We get access to him through his holy name. So there's protection from the onslaught of material existence. It's not that doesn't get cold up north and doesn't get hot down here in Texas. It'll still get hot in Texas and cold up north, but the misery of material existence, one is lifted above it by taking shelter of the holy name. Not that you don't get old and diseased and die, the body will undergo those transformations, but the identification with finding happiness in the temporary is withdrawn because there's this shower of nectar from within the holy name, the shelter of the holy name. And the fullness of Krishna is available, readily available. Please take it, that kind of readily available, within the process of devotional service, taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna gives himself fully to the surrendered devotee. And our weekend together is exploring different levels of that taking shelter, especially taking the guidance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his brilliant exposition on this process of taking shelter. One of the appreciations of shelter taking is, what is that object? I've said this I don't know how many times, many hundreds of times. Something that I heard Prabhupada say a number of times has gone deeply inside, so I'll share it. When a goal is very well defined, then it's quite easy to make steps towards the goal. And conversely, if a goal is not well defined, it's very difficult to take steps towards the goal. But it's very helpful to know what the goal is. Just as the goal of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is found within Srimad Bhagavatam, Ashraya, meaning Krishna. Krishna is the Swa-Ashraya Shraya. He's the shelter of everything else that gives shelter. He's the shelter of everything. So the goal is Krishna's shelter. And who's Krishna? There's a very nice definition given by Baladev Vidyabhushan in his, he made it one of his books as a commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam. And one of the names, 1,000 names, is Krishna. So here's what he writes, referring to Gopal Tapani Upanishad. The syllable Krish means existence, and the syllable Na means bliss. The combination of these two is Krishna, the existence of all bliss. Prabhupada sometimes would say this, Na refers to Ananda, or it's the root of Ananda, the bliss of all existence. So, back to this other verse, this is the downpour of delicious nectar, avivarshat. When we're, the place where we are in is a place of unlimited misery, avihatasya. That's where we are, and we're being invited to the place where there's this shower of nectar, the bliss of all existence. It's not a difficult choice, except we're attached not to the misery, but we're attached to the sources of misery. And to be attached to the sources of misery is ignorance. That's one of the three brands: ignorance, passion, and ignorance. Ignorance, passion, and goodness. And the force of ignorance is very strong. And so the power of the holy name is a place that's worthy of shelter. That's the goal. Taking shelter of the source of the source of existence of all happiness, of all real contentment. And in this process of shelter taking of that source, because of our limitations, born of ignorance, or due to our having been so accustomed to ignorance, we can't let go of it. We can't let go of the sources of our misery. Krishna attracts us anyway. Jiva Goswami explains it this way. When the word Krishna is uttered in a mantra, the very moment the first syllable is vibrated, this sound attracts the attention of Lord Krishna himself. Now over on this side, we're distracted. But Krishna's not over on this side. Krishna's on the other side of material existence. And even the first syllable, Krish, think about it. He's Bahir Nishingo Hridaye Nishingo. He's within him. He's outside of everything. And by his hearing the call of his name, immediately his attention is attracted. Even we're distracted. And therefore by not just by repetition. Certainly repetition, numerical strength, has its place in devotional practice. But the intention of the person chanting will help strengthen where our attention will go. You got that one? We had a nice discussion with Vaisheshika Prabhu about this right in the middle of one class one time. They're connected. Attention goes where your intention is directed. Same message as defining the goal makes it easy to take steps to get to the goal. So what's the intention when we're engaged in chanting? Goal-wise is having full shelter in Krishna. That's where then, in degrees, as strong as our and clear is our intention, then our attention will also go. And part of that is to recognize this. Even we're distracted, Krishna is attracted. So we have to work on the intention or attention factor in chanting, which is strengthened by our intention. When put it this way, we're not our ideal standard of devotion. Followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu find the residents of Vrindavan. This is Brihat Bhagavatamrita. The greatest recipient of the mercy of Krishna is the residents of Vrindavan. And for all the residents of Vrindavan and all the different rasas, their attention doesn't need a prompt. They don't need to tell their mind, "Okay, my dear mind, now go to Krishna." That's us. That's sadhana, the practicing stage. They're not sadhakas. They're not bhava bhaktas. They're prema bhaktas. They're braja prema bhaktas. They're spontaneously thinking of Krishna. We're not there. But that's the goal, the model. And for such persons, there's a very nice prayer in Padyavali. Padyavali is a collection of writings or statements, and some of them are his own prayers, Rupa Goswami, Padyavali. So there's one prayer that one gopi is praying or saying, making a statement, a poetic statement. It's actually better when I don't see Krishna. Because when I see Krishna, there's only one Krishna. And my attention fully goes to that one Krishna. And in the absence of Krishna, everything I see and everywhere I look, there is Krishna. There's many, many Krishnas. So better to have this absence of Krishna and hankering for the presence of Krishna. So that's a good fortune for us. We can't see Krishna. But the misfortune is there's not a hankering to see Krishna, the intention to see Krishna. But when there is that intention to see Krishna, a little bit, this is this deepening our shelter taking in Krishna, a little hankering like that, Krishna is even more attracted. And when it becomes very deep and deep, deeper than deep and so forth, this state of mamata, that's not just something that we do and we feel, it's something that Krishna does and Krishna feels. This is taken directly from the Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu speaking about Maharaj Ambarish. "The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the core of the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Of course, all living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels. And there's a lot of living entities that aren't pure devotees. But for one who becomes so firm, proportionate to the shelter taking in Krishna, Krishna gives himself to that person. That's the person. That's the object, that's the goal, that's the person who we're wishing to take shelter of more deeply. Because it's natural. And because Krishna is all attractive, because Krishna has these qualities like this that are all attractive. A very nice example of this mamata characteristic of Krishna is found in another verse explained by Baladev from Vishnu Sahasranam. One of the 1,000 names of Vishnu is Vasumana. Vasumana refers to Krishna's regard for Bhishma Dev. As many of you know, Bhishma Dev was one of the Vasus, and by circumstance he became Bhishma Dev. But his quality and character was that of a Vasu. It's for that reason Parashuram couldn't defeat him. Great warrior. So Vasumana is explained by Baladev in this way. Commentary. One day, in Hastinapur, Krishna was visiting in Hastinapur, and Yudhisthira woke up, and after doing his morning duties, he went to greet Krishna, as was his practice. And when he came to greet Krishna one morning, Krishna was in deep meditation. And so he didn't disturb him because he was in deep meditation, and he waited a long time. And finally, Krishna completed his deep meditation and received Yudhisthira. And Yudhisthira asked him, what is it that you're meditating upon, may I ask? And his answer was, I was meditating on Grandfather Bhishma. And the explanation given, greatly afflicted and lying on the bed of arrows, Bhishma Dev remembered me at the last stage of his life. Because of his remembrance of me, O best of men, I now always remember him. Thus, Vasu Mana is the name of Krishna. He's always thinking of Vasu or Bhishma Dev. Krishna gives himself completely to one who gives themselves to him. So, what does that say? It says that the free will choice is in our hand. And we just have to take shelter. And Krishna gives himself to us, proportionate to our shelter taking. So everyone assembled here, lots of people that aren't here also, but all of us assembled here are daily chanting the holy name. And the gathering together is to help one another focus on taking deeper shelter. And in that taking of deeper shelter, Krishna's giving himself more in proportion to our taking deeper shelter. And gradually, continuing to move towards that standard of remembrance of Krishna of the residents of Vrindavan, where it's spontaneous. They don't have to go to a japa retreat. Mother Jasoda, she's churning butter. This is from the Damodar Leela described by Jiva Goswami. She's churning butter and she doesn't need a songbook. She just is spontaneously singing the glories of Krishna and his beauty and his activities. And as she's churning butter, she has bangles, and it makes a ching-ching sound like cartels. The pot has paddles inside the pot, and it makes a boom-boom sound like the mridanga, and she's a one-man band. Just spontaneously singing the glories of Krishna. And there's nothing else for her but that. The sacrifice that she will make, our acharyas say, that Mother Jasoda prays, I would gladly give up 1,000,000 lifetimes just to save Krishna from the disturbance of some perspiration on his forehead. The standard of seeking Krishna's happiness as the purpose. For us, it's making that become a goal. Again, that's the Sharanagati. The surrender is service, and the mood of service, of pleasing Krishna, and nothing about our own consideration of whatever we might think is happiness. That's the goal. And there's steps to reach the goal. There's a problem in the material world. There's always a problem, and the problem is ourselves, our own mind, and its stubbornness to not go to Krishna. And part of that stubbornness has to do with lifetimes and lifetimes. Now again, I'm making reference in a summary way to Jiva Goswami's teachings about our indifference to Krishna. What to speak of our bad attitude toward Krishna, starting with ignoring him and then deepening that ignoring him, and doing things and saying things and conducting ourselves in such a way offending him. And there's consequences of offending, and the consequences of offending is the heart becomes contaminated with unwanted things, anartas in the heart, and those are counteracted, Lord Chaitanya teaches, by this very nice Shikshastakam teaching. We have no taste because of lacking in these characteristics of humility, trinadapi sunichena, tolerance, taror iva sahishnana, amanina manadena, not being respectful to others and failing to offer, anticipating respect in return. So Jiva Goswami indicates the way to restore this quality of being attracted to the all-attractive, at least from our side, begins with humility, and not just an external pranam with our palms folded, but from the heart. And same towards other living entities that are part and parcel of Krishna, certainly to the deity form of Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Nila Madhava Ki Jai. The Vaishnavas, the book Srimad Bhagavatam, and the holy name, these principal activities. And the Holy Dham. Just before returning back to the United States, I was very fortunate to be in Mayapur in Vrindavan. It's not difficult, having spent some time in Vrindavan, just as the t-shirt says, you leave your heart in Vrindavan. It's not difficult. It's very, very natural. Think of the holy Dham of Vrindavan even when you're not in Vrindavan, if you have spent some time. Same if you have spent some time quality conscious time, just as it says here, practicing the chanting of the holy name, where the mood is increasing, whatever your standard is today, tomorrow, and the next day, increasing the standard of your shelter taking, to feel some affinity for the holy name. So along with this baggage of offending Krishna, one of the chief resting places of that baggage is our false ego, of course, the mind. But even more subtle than the mind is the false ego. So just in principle, letting go or leaving behind or discarding false ego, that there's a beautiful verse in the third canto Bhagavatam, Kapila's teachings to Devahuti, that the power of bhakti has the power to dissolve the subtle body, the mind, material intelligence, and our dear friend false ego. Bhakti has the power to dissolve all of that. Yay! No more material mind. It doesn't leave you mindless, it leaves you with spiritual thought, spiritual intelligence, and spiritual sense of ego. That's the meaning of this word, namaha. Here's directly quoting Padma Purana. Ma represents ahankar, and na represents negation of ahankar, thus uttering namaha. One negates one's independent attitude. The jiva is dependent on the Lord. He lives with dependence. Therefore, one should completely reject the idea of accomplishing by one's own capacity. Interesting sentence. Anything. Nothing is left to be accomplished by the ability of the Lord. Consigning one's body to the Lord, one should serve Him. Now, this is just a little amplification of the point of conscious sadhana. In our prayers, in our pranam mantras, in our so many places, in our Gayatri mantras, this word namaha appears. And it's kind of mechanical. It's just one of those things that's part of the prayers you say. But the meaning, the conscious effort of offering obeisances and uttering the word namaha is from the get-go, it's negation of false ego. If you negate false ego, what's left? Well, if you're a Buddhist, it's nothing. Literally. Nothing. And you enter into a state of nothingness. You don't even twinkle like a star in the sky. It's nothingness. But for the devotee, it's somethingness. It's the position of shelter in our relationship with Krishna. That's the desire, the hankering of the qualified Vaishnava. And to become qualified Vaishnavas, we have to be conscious as we're chanting the Maha Mantra and chanting other mantras and hearing and chanting. What's the message? What's the goal? And the sound vibration will help us to get to the goal if we're, the more we're clear about the goal. And in the proper mood where we're very happy to namaha, to leave behind the world of darkness and enter into the light of presence of Krishna. Very nice image is the four Kumaras as they're very eager to check out the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, leaving behind their impersonalism and coming to the shelter of the Supreme Lord. That's the real namaha beyond the false sense of self and entering into this real world. Sharanagati is like a gate. Just say, I'm saying the same thing in another way. It's like a gate. It's like, you know, there's the doorway that, from which we came into the temple or through which. And once you come into this realm of Sharanagati, it's not like, okay, I did it, I surrendered. But it's an ongoing, it's a process of ongoing submission and surrender up to the standard of the residents of Vrindavan. And even the residents of Vrindavan, their intensity isn't static. Prabhupada's teaching is their mood is ecstatic. It's ever increasing. And how is something that's practically beyond our comprehension ever increasing? It's just the nature of the spiritual world. So maybe the longer we wait, the more ecstatic it'll be, right? Because it's ever increasing. Get on board with the connecting with the mood of surrender so that we can become, leave behind the material existence and seek the position of shelter in Krishna. So I'm going to do two things and then I think I'm going to end. Just because this evening is just an introduction to our time spent together this weekend. Going to try a little bit to involve all of you in some bringing this message within, or trying to think of the proper word, internalizing the message. So the deity curtain is closed, but many of you worship the deity of Radha Nila Madhava regularly. I'll be doing this again tomorrow, so the curtain probably won't be closed. Or there's Prabhupada's Murti, or many of you have a spiritual master. And so I will just request minute and a half of think of the deity or Prabhupada or your spiritual master or someone that you feel there's shelter. And in a silent thought, offer a personal prayer to that deity or your home deity or whatever to assist us on this journey, benedict us, give their blessings that this journey of deepening our shelter in the holy name and in our service to Krishna will grow from our time spent together. Writings of Srila Prabhupada, he has identified the persons within ISKCON, persons who are his followers, are followers of Lord Chaitanya, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya we understand through Rupa Goswami principally, so others, of course, but Rupa Goswami, therefore this term Rupanuga, or followers of Rupa Goswami. And to assist us in this taking deeper shelter, deepening our shelter in the Holy Name, I thought of reciting some beautiful prayers from Stavamala by Rupa Goswami, some prayers he's offering to Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya is his worshipable deity. He established Govindaji in the deity form, but in his heart of hearts, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his worshipable Lord and master of his life. So he's offered some, and through Lord Chaitanya, the master of his life, he's been given bhakti. Of course, he's an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya and eternal associate of Krishna. But that's his mood. He's teaching us in this way. So I'm going to show some images of Lord Chaitanya, and I request in a meditative mood, I'll read some of the verses of the first portion of Stavamala. There are 8 verses, ashtakas. But he's, the meditation I'm inviting you is the heart of Rupa. He's disclosing his heart and his love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given him and the world. And therefore, it provides the impetus for deepening his shelter, although it's already perfect, deepening his shelter in Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is always the most worshipable deity of the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, who came in the garb of ordinary men bearing love for him. He instructed his own pure devotional service to his own pure devotees. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the protector of the demigods. He is the supreme goal of the Upanishads. He is the be-all and end-all of all the great sages. He is the beautiful shelter of his devotees. And he is the essence of love of the lotus-eyed gopis. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? It's a longing, a deep, intense, not just poetic, it's his heart's longing to be again in Lord Chaitanya's association. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has manifested his own form. And what does that form look like? It cannot be compared to anything in the material universe. He is very dear to Advaitacharya, and Srivas Pandit is surrendered to him. He is respectful to Paramananda Puri. He takes away the ignorance of the material world, and he delivers the conditioned souls who are suffering from the threefold miseries. He showered his mercy on Maharaj Prataparudra, the king of Orissa. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became maddened by tasting the mellows of devotional service. His effulgent form is the abode of sweetness for millions of cupids. He is the crest jewel of sannyasis. His garments are the color of the effulgence of the sun, and the splendor of his body eclipses the beauty of gold. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? Separation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in a loud voice, and the holy name dances on his tongue as he counts the number of recitations with his effulgent hands. His eyes are large, his arms are long, and they bend as he performs his pastimes. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the topmost of all devotees. And sometimes, in Jagannath Puri, when walking on the beach, he would see a beautiful garden nearby and he would mistake it for the forest of Vrindavan, and he would thus become completely overwhelmed by ecstatic love of Krishna. And he would begin to chant the holy names. He would dance. His tongue would work incessantly as he chanted, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced on the main road in great ecstasy before Lord Jagannath, the master of Nilachala, who is sitting on his cart, overwhelmed by the transcendental bliss of dancing, and surrounded by the Vaishnavas who sang the holy names. He manifested waves of ecstatic love for Krishna. When will he again become visible before my eyes? There's additional verses, and it's just one of the Stavamala verses. Poetic, but at the same time expressing the features, the symptoms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that stimulate his ecstatic love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his gift to the world. As he was tasting, he was just encouraging and distributing that taste to all others. So our time together is deepening the appreciation of what that shelter is and the sweetness of going further and further and further. There's obstacles. There's lots of impetus that can help us overcome those obstacles. And in the association of others who are directing their attention like-minded way, and exalted Vaishnavas helping to lead in the chanting of the holy name, I'm sure it'll be a wonderful experience. Just a couple more. There's so many wonderful prayers that have been offered in glorification of the holy name. I'll just present a couple more. This is our goal, the object that we're taking shelter of. My dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, since I have directly seen you, my transcendental bliss has taken the shape of a great ocean. Being situated in that ocean, I now realize that all other so-called happiness to be like the water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. Because of the there's a lot of light in the room. Can we turn the light down just for a sec? Because it's a nice, very nice image. In the mud, there's the image of a calf hoof in the mud. And when it rains, some water will be gathered in the hoof print of the calf. And the amount of water that's in the hoof print of a calf can be compared to the happiness, so-called happiness, that's of this material world. Here's this beautiful prayer. The shelter of the personality of Godhead is like an ocean of transcendental bliss. And the holy name is the fullness of that same form of Krishna. And the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in his deity form, or the Bhagavatam form, or the holy name form. This is this mood of humble service to the goal of life. And another verse by Rupa Goswami. Oh, Harinam. I like this. The tips of the toes of your lotus feet. This is the holy name. The holy name has feet. And his feet have toes. And the tips of the toes of his lotus feet, the holy name's lotus feet, are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads, the crest jewels of all the Vedas. So consider the Vedas to be a treasure house of jewels. And amongst the treasure house of jewels, there's the crest jewels, or the best of the jewels. And the best of those jewels are the Upanishads, and they're effulgent. And the effulgence of the Upanishad is worshipping the tips of the toes of the holy name. Isn't that poetic? Within the Vedas, the topmost of all the wisdom is within the Upanishads, and they're worshipping, the effulgence of the Upanishads is worshipping the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of the holy name. You, O holy name, you are eternally adored by liberated souls such as Narada and Shukadev. The already liberated, we're not already liberated, in case you haven't noticed. But there are those that are already liberated, and those who are already liberated, they worship and take full shelter and eternally adore the holy name. Purnashuddho Nityamukto. Oh, Harinam, I take complete shelter of you. So let us attempt, following these exalted personalities that understand far more than what we understand about the goal of life and have accomplished it far better. Let us become inspired and hear from them. Largely tomorrow, we're going to be hearing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guided journey from darkness to transcendence through the process of taking shelter of Krishna, and particularly taking shelter of Krishna through his holy name. Okay. So see if there's any, we have some portable microphone here. Some comments or questions for the beginning part of our time together. Okay. Yes.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much. The wonderful class. I have a couple of questions. One question is about chanting attentively.
Chanting?
Attentively.
Attentively.
See, right. So, what does it exactly mean?
What does
attentive
it exactly
chanting,
mean?
Does it mean?
What does it exactly mean? I was planning to give you an answer that it,
yes.
What it doesn't exactly mean.
Yeah. Is it something that...
Now I have to tell you what it exactly means.
What does it exactly mean? Meaning...
What does it exactly mean?
And of course, I've not completed the question yet, but here are a couple of, based on what we have heard, should we pay attention to the sound of the mantra?
Well,
should our mind go to the form of the deities when we are chanting the mantra?
Oh, that's easy. You made it easy. The other one was more challenging.
Yes.
Let's go back to the other one.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, what's the second one? Then we'll go back to the more challenging one. The second one, read carefully Harinam Chintamani. Harinam Chintamani is a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's a dialogue between Lord Chaitanya and Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur explains, within the name is everything. So where attention should go is to the sound vibration of the name. Hear the sound of the name very attentively. Speak the sound of the holy name very attentively. I shared this last time I was with Badahari. His whole body like jumped when I said it. I said recently I received a letter from someone that was saying, I'm really enjoying hearing my 16 rounds every day.
Remember?
And he said, his comment was something to the effect of, sometimes when I'm chanting with other devotees and I hear the sound that they're making, it's clear that they're not attentive to the sound that they're making. They're not hearing the sound. They're making a sound for sure. They're chanting japa or something, but it's not, not even clear what they're saying. How can they be hearing something to that effect? So, hear. And that's where your attention should go. And then within the sound, not over there somewhere, the form of Krishna will come. It's already there. The form of Krishna is in the sound or of the sound, and one will see the form within the sound. When the mind follows the kind of chanting that Rupa Goswami speaks, it enters the chamber of the heart. The mind becomes stunned. The senses become inert. And then the form appears. And the qualities connected with that form and the pastimes appear. If there's no harm at all, we'll be, when we do our 64 round day, we'll be here in the deities. So if the attention goes to the deity when chanting, make sure it is helping the attention go to the holy name, not you get lost the sound of the holy name in some other feature of the name or of the form or pastime. Similarly, it just can easily get lost. Stay with the attention going to the sound of Krishna's name. That's the method. And, you know, the part of that, what does it really mean is attention doesn't go elsewhere. It's the inclusive and exclusive. So you may think, I'm thirsty. It's not like you don't think I'm thirsty, because you're just responding to some impulse of the body. You've been chanting and you're thirsty. But connect that, whatever the thought is, something, something, to the holy name. Stay focused on the holy name. Try to not be distracted by other things that we're just accustomed to by everyday life, and paying attention to those other things while the mouth is making a sound. Exclusive and inclusive. And for that, for some period of time, especially with our daily japa, and when we expand the number of rounds that we do, while we're chanting japa, we're fully attentive to that one thing. We're not multi-processing. That's what, we're attentive to that one thing. And then you can do all the other things far more effectively because of that connection with Krishna. Now your second, you had a second question?
Actually, my second question is related to sadhana practice. So, in the process of chanting, how important is sadhana?
How do we practice it?
How important sadhana is it? In terms of continually doing, in terms of chanting the Maha Mantra at a certain point of time every day. How does this help in terms of attentively chanting?
Okay. Lots of things to say on that one. I'll just say two things. One of them is taken directly from Jiva Goswami and his Bhakti Sandarbha, where he explains why it's important. In fact, more than important, it's imperative to perform sadhana numerically and continuously and with great attention. That the short of that one is because of offenses, there's anarthas in the heart. And so the sun of the holy name, the brilliance of the sun of the holy name is blocked by the clouds of anarthas. Therefore, we must continue to chant on a regular basis. And he supports that by Vedanta Sutra that says it must be done on a regular basis. And then to support that, he refers to Patanjali Yoga Sutra that says what the standard of something that allows something to be considered abhyasa or sadhana, practice. It is three things. You've named two of them. And there's a third. One is every day. Then another is over a prolonged period of time. And the third is where there is some faith or conviction that'll take you to the goal. And that's the conscious part. We can do the every day over a period of time without being conscious. And then the effect, it's not really sadhana. It's not really abhyasa. It's mechanical. To make it spiritual, it has to have that. Now, for us, it's under the authority of the Vedas or the authority of Mahaprabhu explaining, as Ishwar Puri explained to him, Harir Nama, Harir Nama. So, because it can carry one, it's meant for this age to carry one to the stage of perfection. And through, from where we are to perfection, there's lots of layers. And so, because there's offenses, there's impurities of the heart, anarthas, therefore we must. The power of the holy name is there that even once can carry one to perfection. Offenseless chanting can carry one to perfection. We're not there yet. Therefore, it's a must for one who's sincere, sustained over a period of time, every day, without fail, with deep faith and conviction, conscious sadhana, making effort daily over a period of time. Someone else? Yeah, back there.
Hare Krishna. Maharaji, this is my first time attending such courses in ISKCON temple. So,
first time to the temple?
No, I mean attending such courses.
Program. Okay, fine.
You're going to
have a good time. I wish for you to have a good time.
I think my question is related to that. Means I register for the course, but still in my mind, I don't know what the japa retreat means and what I'm expecting to learn, what I'm expecting to experience in next 2 days. So, like, I'm very curious because I was thinking, and when I registered, but when after registration, I saw that I see this schedule 4:30 to 8:30, and I was like, man, how is going to help me 4:30 to 8:30 without break? So means last 2 days I'm thinking why I should wake up 4:30, and you know how, what is japa retreat means, and what is, why this I have to get up just so early, and how the schedule is going to help me. So
well, If you don't make it to 4:30, we won't spank you. There's no punishment. It's just, you know, that's the Brahma Muhurta hour. It's the hour for ideal spiritual benefit from spiritual practice, according to the Vedas. And that's why we have 4:30 Mangalarti. But, you know, what is it and what can you expect? I think that's like, you're curious. What is it and what can I expect? Basically, right? Well, in really simple language, it's a journey. It's a life. We experiment in so many things that we don't know what's going to be on the other end, but, you know, go check it out. Because, you know, it sounds nice. A little sharing. There was one of the first ones of what we're doing here. We held in the suburbs in Chicago. And at the end, one fellow came and said, "My friend, we work in the office together. I've never been to a temple. I've never had my hand in a bead bag. I don't even know anything about the whole thing. But I was planning to go to the beach." And he said, "Hey, why don't you come with me to a japa retreat?" And he said, "Well, I've been to the beach lots of times. I've never been to one of those. What's it like?" And he said, "What's it like?" He said, "Well, you know, nothing to those. I've been to the beach before. I'll go with you." That was like, you know, no expectation at all. Just like, hey, let's go check it out. An interesting new experience. And he said, "You know, when I came into this gathering, these are all people I don't know and what to speak of putting my hand in a bead bag. It's just a whole new thing. But I found these people are really nice. And they seem to, you know, have warm relationships and they treat me like that, like I'm one of them. It's like I felt really good." And then, you know, came to this chanting thing. He was using language like that. And so I said, "You know, what the heck?" So they showed me how to hold the beads and I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. And, you know, it was really nice. It just, you know, chanted 16 rounds. I thought, wow, that felt really good. Maybe I'll do another 16. And then he completed something like 50 rounds. He'd never. So then I had a big lunch and, you know, I kind of got fuzzed out and I couldn't go any further, but it was like really good experience. And, you know, next time you have one of these things, give me a call and I'd like to come again. So for him, it was just like an experience, but the experience was very elevating. And who knows what's going to be at the other end of the journey. So there's no promise what's going to be at the other end. We're just placing ourselves in Krishna's hand, and Krishna he's kind. So whatever the experience is going to be the fruit of his kindness. And sometimes it's like that. You know, just anecdotal, because your question leads to that. There was one lady that came. She has, you know, a lap child. He said, "I came because my husband wanted to come. So I didn't want to, you know, stay home alone. I came with him. I didn't have any expectation. My baby fell asleep. So I never chanted before. They showed me how to chant and I chanted 16. It was really nice. And then, hey, another 16. I chanted 32. My baby woke up. That was it. But, you know, the whole experience, I had never chanted before. And the whole experience was, so in the association of others who are on the same journey, and some may be at this level, some may be at that level, and some at whatever level, the focused spiritual energy of taking deeper, from whatever our position is, taking deeper shelter of the holy name, is to give us that experience of contacting Krishna in a mood of taking shelter of him. What's that feel like? That's what it's all about. And for different persons, I've been chanting for 46 years. Badahari, probably something close to that. Something close to that. And so some of us have been at this for a long time. Seated right in front of you here is our temple president. And he's been chanting for a whole long period of time. He had a medical situation where he nearly lost his life. And after that, something happened. He took deeper shelter in the holy name, and now he's, you know, an advocate of not just doing your prescribed duty and be a religious man, but take deep shelter of the holy name, because that's the goal of life. So whatever the stage somebody is in, taking a step or two towards life's goal, being clear what the goal is, at least identifying it nominally or notionally, and then from wherever we are, take some steps, and you feel something. It adds, when you feel that realization or that feeling, it strengthens faith. Now, that young man was a worker at AT&T. I never saw him at another Japa retreat, but that impression is permanently with him. Even if he forgets for next 10 lifetimes, it's still with him. So that's, what's it like to be more deeply in a relationship with Krishna through the portal of the holy name, the kind mercy given to us when Krishna gives himself to us? Just say Krish, and he's attracted. That's the person that we're taking shelter of. That's the kind of love and kindness of that person we're learning to take deeper shelter of. Anything else? We'll end here. Oh, you have something?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When I was thinking about the goal, it seems to be mostly like fixing the immediate problems, that is more connecting, but the goal we are talking about, I mean life's goal, it seems to be like not so connecting like that. So I want to hear like how to shift the fulcrum.
How to do what?
Set the goal, like not just immediate things.
How to set the goal?
Not just fixing the immediate things. But like the
not
goal
expect,
seems to be not
expecting clear. Something immediate, but a long-term goal. Is that what you're saying?
Like, I mean, what I'm noticing is like when I hear the goal, it is like more like fixing the immediate problems. You know, want to have a comfortable situation at work, comfortable situation at home, like that. I'm not able to make a connection to the life's goal.
Well, okay. I think I understand your question. Even in those immediate things, bhakti means to see the long-term goal even in the immediate things. It's not about the immediate things. That's prayas. Short term, and even within the things that we're doing that are immediately pressing on us, bhakti is to look for the long term. I mean, just a simple example is a child going to school. Some children like the challenge of academic work. Whether they like the challenge of academic work or not, what's the purpose of doing academic work? And some people think it's so I can get a certificate. Or some people say, after the certificate, I can then get a good job, and then with a good job, I can get comfortable living, and the goal is the comfortable living. So while I'm doing this work over here, it's the comfortable living over here. So a life of devotion is thinking beyond that, the comfortable life over here, which is what you're saying. It's What's the mission of life? We're spirit soul. Back here, like, expectation. We're spirit soul. We belong not in this material atmosphere trying to make things comfortable where it's never going to be like that. It says, by design. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. By design. And the designer is infallible. It's not designed. Prisons are not designed to be nice places. This is a prison house. It's not going to be a nice place. So a more thoughtful person will understand the goal is not make a place of dukkha a place of sukha. It's not going to happen. So what's the purpose? So it takes being thoughtful. And the message of the scripture helps us awaken that thoughtfulness and definition of what the goal is. Now, what you're saying is, yeah, but tendency is to think short term. Okay. According to the short term, as best you can, make the arrangements short term. And in so doing, also be attentive to the long term. And gradually by hearing and association and so forth, the long term becomes more focused, just like these little examples of improper association. This can provide an experience of what's really the goal of life, or the potential of the human experience is far beyond making temporary things nice. So I know you well enough to know that I know that you know that. You're just asking a nice question for everyone's benefit. But that's what we're here for. Shelter in the goal of life. Shelter in the goal of life. Shelter in our relationship with Krishna, wishing to please Krishna as our mood and mission. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is there time for kirtan? I think so. Some members would like to hear kirtan. Are you up for that? Father Hari? You up for that? Oh, you're waving to me. Little kirtan?
Can we make, can I make
go ahead. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna. Welcome everyone to the 2017 Japa retreat in Houston. We are very fortunate to have His Holiness Ramapada Swami.